Free Body Problem. I was really reluctant to watch this at first.
Yeah.
You suggested it, and you were kind of already three episodes in before I even considered watching it. I don't know why I was reluctant. I think it's, I just felt like it was going to be a difficult experience. We have this thing with sci-fi, don't we, where
yeah,
we're not quite sold.
Definitely.
So that, you know, I was really struggling to get started. Did you have any issues kind of actually like getting into it or?
100%. I think the first three episodes for me were a real slog. I don't like sci-fi. I've done a whole article on this, on why I don't. I guess it mostly comes down to sort of setting and like an over-reliance on the real traditional themes of sci-fi.
Yeah.
Space exploration, yeah. Time, scientific, technological advancements that don't exist yet. I mean, I know that there's a hypocrisy in saying that, because it's a bit like saying, I don't like fantasy because you don't like, and then just listing all the main tropes of the genre. You know, yeah. Like, what I'm ultimately saying is I just don't like it. Like, yeah. And that's not a real argument, is it? But in my article, like, I reread my article on sci-fi before sitting down because, well, obviously just to refresh my my memory and my own opinion, I guess. And I was talking about space a lot and how not space as in the great unknown, the last frontier. I mean, like, story space. Because setting, I guess, is what I mean. Because there's so much jumping around in setting. The story space is too large. That's the problem. I'm not sure if Three Body Problem is an example of that, though. It handles it well. It has the same problem, but it handles it better than most sci-fi, I think.
Yeah. I mean, my usual issue came... I was really worried at the start of the series because I think sometimes the dialogue can be really not very accessible to audiences. Now, I don't know if that is a, you know, is that my problem as the audience or is that the creator's problem? And I feel like, again, with the detective who was a little bit, you know, he admits that we're stupid, we don't get this, but...
Mm.
You know, you're scientists and you're all dying right now. So, who's got the real issue here? The fact that you have the dynamics of the scientists who speak in this real, you know, advanced language, and then you have the detective, and you know, almost like a civilian
mm-hmm.
who doesn't really understand what they're talking about. But that is that relationship. You kind of hang on to that relationship as the audience because
yeah, he's kind
you're
of,
kind of in the same boat.
He's kind of a stand-in for the audience.
I think that was a really impressive way for Three Body Problem to address that issue that I would perceive, you know, with the kind of the barrier.
That's very common with story with like TV though, right? And all stories, to have a kind of character who represents the audience's perspective. They're kind of a stand-in for the audience. They're the person that you attach yourself to and you see the story through. Yeah. Otherwise, there's nothing familiar to latch onto.
Yeah.
And that can be quite overwhelming and not really, I don't know, it doesn't really have much effect.
Yeah. So Three Body Problem, and I think it's reflected in the fact that it is, you know, let's say the most watched thing going, you know, or it was a couple of weeks ago. It has actually ended up being quite accessible. And because of that, the series really grew on me.
Mm. I think this version has been accessible, but there are multiple versions of this story. Mm. Three Body Problem is based on a series of novels by Liu Cixin. I'm pronouncing
Cixin.
Cixin, is it? I don't know how to pronounce his name with a C rather than an X. Liu Cixin.
Mr. Liu,
right? The author that, and it's interesting because Three Body Problem represents a sort of geopolitical tension, doesn't it? I can't remember the last thing I watched that came out of China that was made for a Western audience. I know we're getting a lot of Korean dramas at the moment, but like, there's not really a lot out of China.
Yeah, and we can't really talk about Three Body Problem, it seems, without talking about the cultural dynamics between China and the US.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of criticism for the show has appeared to be from Chinese critique.
Yeah.
The show's too westernized. this show should be completely set in China. I read a really interesting article. You might have read the same one from the New York Times.
Yeah.
and that really kind of laid it all out for me when I was reading that. You know, at first I was like, yeah, well, it's a Chinese story and it's been hijacked. And then on the other hand, this writer went into an awful lot. I can credit the writer, as I'm sure you can. Li Yuan, who's based in Hong Kong.
Right.
And she usually writes on Chinese censorship and the emerging technological Cold War between China and the US.
Mm.
So she's living and breathing the
space that this story has stepped into. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So a summary of the critique, we've got that it's too westernized. The initial depiction of the struggles and the Red Guard are unnecessary, according to Chinese critics, and that it should completely be set in China.
Mm-hmm.
Some other critiques were there was a male character from the books that was completely replaced by a female, right. And apparently she wasn't attractive enough.
Okay. So, and
that was covered by Li Yuan, who wrote the article, and that kind of gave, you know, at first I was like, oh, maybe this story, Netflix have hijacked this story, and maybe right. It's not, you know, that's not okay. But the original writer, Mr. Liu, gave approval for the opening scene.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually commented, and he said, the Cultural Revolution appears because it is essential to the plot.
Mm.
The protagonist has to lose all faith in humanity. So it was quite horrific. And when I started watching the show, I thought, wow, if this is the start of the show, what on earth are we in for?
Yeah.
But it just set the tone for the protagonist's reasoning for her actions.
It's interesting that so much criticism has come from that opening scene, because it's such a short scene. It's such a small part of this show. Of course, as Mr. Liu says, it's crucial.
Mm.
Because without it, you know, this character, Yi, wouldn't lose all faith in humanity to the point where she actually puts her hopes in this alien civilization. And I mean alien in every sense of the word.
Mm.
It's strange that so much criticism's come from it, though, because it's so not... like, it's not the focus.
Mm.
The Cultural Revolution is essential to the plot, but it's not the focus of the plot at all. Almost immediately afterwards, we're then put in London and elsewhere, mostly in the UK, like following the events of modern-day scientists who are kind of like experiencing... Well, they're all seeing numbers and they're all encouraged by this extraterrestrial force to stop their research. The story shifts away from it really quickly, is what I'm saying. It's not surprising, though, that obviously it's drawn some criticism from a Chinese audience, because it does paint the Cultural Revolution in a particularly negative way.
Yeah, Li Yuan, who wrote the New York Times article, commented on this, and she said there's some desperation from Chinese critics to gloss over the Cultural Revolution, but it did span a decade, and over 1 million people died in abnormal deaths. So that there's almost a forget about that. You know, the critique is, oh, look at these Westerners making us look really bad and look all villainous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think the point's been missed here, that Netflix have actually taken literature from, you know, a prominent Chinese author and brought it into the worldview. And for all Netflix's criticisms, that, you know, they've actually reached into a playbook that they've not gone before and actually given credit to a Chinese creator.
Yeah, I think it's more complicated than that, though. The article about sci-fi, I talked about science fiction potentially being the genre that's like most equipped or best equipped for tackling like the large questions, broader themes like space and time and humanity's very place in the universe, I suppose. And three-body problem, it does it well because of this sort of geopolitical tension that underpins it all between, as you mentioned, like China and the US, or China and the West more generally. You can kind of see like the battle between the aliens that Yi invites. Side note real quick, that is a tense scene. I loved that. Really, really cool. I think it's the conclusion of the first episode when she messages, she gets the first contact from the aliens. She points a beam at the sun and, like, you know, sends out the message. And that first contact comes in and is like, don't reply, we'll come. And she's like, come anyway, we need, like, we can't save ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, like, what a tense, like, and it's obviously like 40 odd years before much more happens, but oh, incredible. Anyway, I think, you know, it's kind of, you can kind of see it as allegorical though for a Chinese totalitarian government. You know, the Sofon thing that can see everything?
Yeah.
Sort of maybe a metaphor for how Chinese citizens in everyday life are constantly watched, always, you know, and this environment that, you know, it quells free thought and kind of stunts, that environment, I guess, stunts scientific advancements as well.
Yeah.
Because it's not conducive to, you know, freedom of discovery and expression and thought and sharing knowledge. So I guess in that way you can kind of see this sci-fi piece as a metaphor for this author's opinions, that, you know, her political persuasions, right? In the way that the invasion shadowed humans kind of represent the Everwatch Chinese. But the thing is, that's a really Western view. And I think it's quite easy to assume that everything written under a totalitarian government is an act of rebellion. It's quite a westernized idea, and as you just mentioned, like, Netflix have never given this much credit to a Chinese writer before by adapting their work not only from its native language but also to the screen. And I think we forget that this has been through three levels of mediation at least. This is a completely different work almost to the series of novels that originally told this story,
because
it's been translated into English, so you're gonna, you know, in all translations you lose a lot, you add a lot, it kind of becomes, it shifts a little bit. And then, of course, it's been translated to the screen. And I mean, we saw in Dune how radically different a movie perception of a sci-fi novel will look, especially when it's something that big. So, of course, that's happened again. The amount of mediation that this has been through has kind of completely shifted what this piece of work is. And I think we need to remember that, you know, like, this is a Chinese series of novels. We're seeing this through Western eyes.
Yeah.
And, of course, the, you know, the writers, these guys that did Game of Thrones, David Benioff and his mate, of course, they're Western as well. You know, like, they've adapted the story for a Western audience and for an American audience. So I think it's very easy to sort of like just fall into the kind of like generic idea that because it's written under a totalitarian government, because it's written in a political landscape that's different from our own, it must be a brave, rebellious piece of work that's standing up to the government. And we're making those assumptions about that metaphor for ourselves, or the writers for the screen have shifted it so it points that way. I also saw an idea or an argument that the Sofon was social media, you know, omnipresent, omniscient, always watched, no such thing as secret anymore. That works as well. Either way,
there's a lot of metaphors within this.
Either way, the translation is ultimately ambiguous. What I do think is interesting, though, is that Mr. Liu, the original author, recommends the English translation because he argues that it's of his novels, that is, because he argues that it's more akin, or it's more accurate to what he actually wanted.
Oh, okay.
He had to make a lot of edits because of, to sort of avoid Chinese censorship.
I did see a comment that the Cultural Revolution had to be in one of his later novels.
Yeah.
Because his editor didn't think it being in his first novel would actually get published.
Yeah. So that does lend a little bit of weight, maybe, to the idea that this is kind of a rebellious piece. This is a little bit critical of the Chinese government. I don't know. But
I mean, I'm about to read up on Mao Zedong.
Yeah, and I was thinking about it. You know.
Because, you know, just because when you look at, like, efforts of communism that haven't worked or you know, are heavily criticized, like, you know, and this Red Guard, you know, he was grooming young radicals to, like, take action against people of power before he came back into to government. So I mean, that really ties everything together. And there's the sparrows. He did a culling of sparrows and he's under his dictatorship because they cause some kind of sickness. So he tried to kill all sparrows. Wow. there's these, you know, it's a regime that I'm about to kind of dive into, but it's quite interesting that, you know, there's that commentary of, well, the Red Guard is a product of communism as well, and it features at the very start of this series. I am critical of Netflix, though, in other regards, in relation to this series, so maybe we could add a little bit of balance here. What we've just discussed adds into the narrative that I believe that Netflix, you know, the producers are sitting in a room thinking, okay, what's hot, what should we go with now? And, you know, there is a China-US conflict, and there is an Oppenheimer wave that's happening, where I don't think 3 years ago anyone was interested in watching something about physics, but Oppenheimer hit the screens last year, and here we are 6 months later with a Netflix special that's number one in the world for how it was 6 weeks or whatever, and I find it sinister.
Yeah.
I find it, you know, they're planning on what's coming out and not.
Well, of course they are.
I think it's too obvious. I think it's so obvious.
Why does it have to be subtle?
Let's play on the wave of what's popular instead of kind of. The thing is, this was an entertaining piece of work, but like, you know, they were making this in 2019.
Yeah.
Why release it now?
Well, two things. One, that was delayed by the SAG-AFTRA strikes. That's probably mostly why. You know, this was finished in 2019. Alexander Wu wanted to add, apparently, you know, allegedly, wanted to add 5 minutes of screen time. He was like, there's 5 minutes here that we need to add. And that 5 minutes is what set them back, because then the SAG-AFTRA strikes happened and they had to wait. I'm not sure how much truth is in that. Allegedly, that happened. But the other thing is, why should it be so that Netflix or that any producers, any writers are subtle about their intentions to capitalize on sort of like modern interests?
Popular culture,
interests,
yeah.
Current interests is what I'm trying
why
to say.
Why should it be subtle? I just think it's sinister to be so obvious about it. Why? But maybe it's be more sinister if they were. But I just think it's, you know, every time we get we've spoke about this, you get every time you get Game of Thrones, there'll be a Netflix double, you know, there'll be a Barbie double at some point, you know, and it's the Downton Abbey double was Bridgerton, like it's just I find it a little bit.
I would argue with you a bit though, because like I mean Downton Abbey for example and Bridgerton, you know, Bridgerton definitely added on is a different thing. With your Oppenheimer and this, that might be a bit of a reach as well. There's a year between them and they're very different pieces. One's a modern...
Yeah, but I don't think anyone has the capacity for a show about physics without having seen Oppenheimer. I just don't believe it.
I don't think there's that much of a comparison between the two, though. One is a historical drama.
Yeah.
One's a biopic, really. Yeah. This is a fictional piece of sci-fi.
Yeah, and
it's about aliens coming to Earth.
Well, absolutely, but it's the dialogue that's withheld. It's held within the show that I don't think people would engage with 2 years ago. That is something that we should probably agree to disagree on.
Yeah, yeah.
Eventually, move on.
The draw of Oppenheimer is obviously the doom, the horror of it all.
Yeah,
and the fascination of the man that actually created that.
Mm. I'm obviously very suspicious of establishments.
That's but that horror isn't present in this. This is a different kind of horror entirely. Yeah. This is a fiction. This is an imagination. I mean, you know, if you want to get conspiracy theory with it, there is that weird branch of the U.S. government that are desperate for us to believe they've got an aircraft. Remember that last year when like they literally announced that the U.S. government announced that they had like evidence of aliens.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
And like that, this coinciding with that, and maybe, you know, they're getting us ready for an announcement or something. But I very much doubt that. I don't know.
They're all sitting in a room, they're going, right, that's come out, let's release this.
Of course they are, because of course they are.
Let's make some more money. Do you know what I mean?
But the industry, I hear what you're saying, but the industry does have to make money. Like, you know, we want these writers paid.
Well, of course, yeah.
We want to, you know, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about this stuff if it didn't exist. You know, like if all art was just made purely for altruism and the like the beauty of art, that'd be great, but also like there'd be less incentive to keep creating art.
Yeah.
It's already a hard enough industry. Near impossible to like get into.
How many Joker installments are we gonna have?
Absolutely fuming at that, to be honest, that we're getting another one of those. But that's not, again, I'm not mad at the people, at the producers up there being like, well, that was a hit, let's do it again. I'm mad at Joaquin Phoenix.
So I guess, you know, 20 minutes in, we should probably start, I guess, discussing more of the content on Three Body Problem. So I thought we had, it was a pretty good story. I warmed to it towards the end. I actually am quite impressed with the fact that I had deep care for the characters towards the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I was I felt none of them at the start had any real redeeming qualities, but yeah, actually as the show progressed, you kind of, like I say, you warmed to it a little bit more. And I was actually thinking about this in a little more length. And maybe it's better to feel distant to a character and like them at the end than really love an, you know, an outspoken character that's made to be like fun and mm-hmm. engaging that you get sick of by the end.
Well, I think one's more nuanced and three-dimensional than the other, you know? Like if you have a character who you have to work out, mm. you're going to ultimately feel more attached to them when you do
mm.
than someone who's actually just a sort of stock character, quite black and white, easy to understand right from the get-go.
Mm.
That's not always the case. I mean, obviously Jack in this.
Well, oh, that's true, actually.
He's pretty lovable. But they killed him off. And they kill him
before off. You get sick of him.
Yeah, yeah. But for that reason, you know, like he's that core character who, you know, you kill off for the shock value, right? And I'm not mad at it. It was a pretty painful death. I didn't want him to go. When he dies, it's like a total shift in tone, because he was sort of like the one element of comic relief,
mm.
kind of, or like the one serious one. So when he dies, you're a bit like, oh, this isn't going to be as much fun anymore. Like, yeah. And although I think I haven't read any of the novels, but apparently I've heard that he doesn't exist in the novels.
Right.
But yeah, I could be wrong about that.
So I have some I would call major creative challenges regarding the way the series went. So the actual invasion. Now, the way this series was presented, invasions in 400 years, I have a stance that unless the invasion is accelerated, the production team will have to create a future, you know, out of nothing. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you create these societies in the future, they're always completely filled with flaws and unbelievable. So now we've got series one set now, where we're in 2023, 2024, whenever it is, and so how's series two gonna go, or series three gonna go? Are we gonna be put forward 400 years, where we've got to just buy into a created world of what the like what Earth will look like in 400 years
potentially,
because I think that's a massive challenge for this show.
Yeah, it is, it definitely is. But I mean, they've got the writing of Mr. Lee to lean onto, don't they? You know, it's not like this is unpaved or like uncharted seas, if you like, in the same way that ironically the same two story runners had George R. R. Martin with Game of Thrones. You know, they had like, they were adapting his work.
Yeah.
And in the same sense, they're doing it again now with the books. So it's not like they're going to have to create this, or like, you know, this is, it's already there. I imagine it'll be done a lot better in the books, as it usually is, but I admit that's a problem.
Huge. But this with buy-in, right? With buy-in for season two or season three.
But I'd argue that all sci-fi faces this problem.
What?
This is my issue with sci-fi in a way, like, and I wouldn't say that a future society that's unbelievable or that's flawed is unbelievable. You know, of course it's going to be. They're almost all like kind of dystopian, and they're almost all flawed in a major way. One way or another, like no one person can just conjure up in their head the perfect society and put it down on paper.
Mm.
They wouldn't be wasting it on fiction if that was the case. Or, I don't know, I guess the people that have thought they can have always ended up villains in history. But, yeah, I admit that is an issue that the show faces. There's all this talk of the characters going into what, you know, this weird sort
getting
of freeze,
frozen.
Yeah, situation where they can, like, you know, so they'll be alive in 400 years.
They get defrosted in 400 years and it's the same as normal.
I don't like this because you start playing with time and
there's not enough
boundaries.
And that's another challenge of mine. You know, that you'll need characters in the future that the audience can care about as they have in this season.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not freezing all the characters. It was like one or two get frozen to go into the future.
I don't think they will.
So you then need a brand new cast when the next season starts.
Yeah, which won't happen. I don't think they're going to go that far into the future. I think the focus of this story of Three Body Problem, and I could be completely wrong, haven't read the books, but I think the focus of this is like the behaviour of a humanity who are doomed, who are being watched, who know they know this imminent invasion is coming, but it's not within their lifetime. What do you do when you discover that something horrendous is going to happen 400 years from now? What do you do? Nothing? Because that's what some of the characters, that's the perspective some of the characters take. Well, who cares? It happens in 400 years' time. That's what Saul says. He was actually, I would say, one of the most likeable characters from the beginning.
Mm.
He's like, well, it's not my problem. And
what's your take?
You mean what?
Hypothetically.
You must have thought about it
after seeing this.
I mean, I'm not a physicist.
No, what's your take if on the news it said, by the way, all done in 400 years? No, I mean, the newsreader wouldn't put up quite like that, but...
I mean, what can I do? I'm no physicist.
Would you just go on as normal? Because obviously you had that
What's
scene...
What's the alternative?
You had that scene where there was people hanging themselves, like, along a river.
Yeah, I didn't really understand
which
that.
Which I thought was a... You know, I thought that was a little bit... You know, I was like, I'm not sure that people would... just do that.
I mean, I think perhaps the existence that,
in the same space.
Yeah. Actually, no, I'll give you that. It's the image that they wanted in there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it's not believable at all. Because, I mean, I understand that perhaps the confirmation of the existence of aliens could be pretty damning to a lot of people's worldview. But, like, if that genuinely did happen, for me, like, what's the alternative but to go on as normal? I'm not equipped to fight it. I'm not going to be up there with the leading physicists and strategists and whatever, like, planning fucking string of nuclear bombs in space to, like, send a probe up. Like, I'd be following the news is what I'd be doing. It's crazy. It obviously completely changed.
Do you think this research is being done with the radar and things like that, trying to get a message? Do you think someone, you know, there is...
Yeah.
Trying to make contact with space? Do you think there is money going into that?
Oh, I don't know if there's money going into it now, but that's surely been a thing forever. There'll have been a weird branch of the US government, like, in the Cold War, like, trying to be the first in touch with the aliens before the Russians got there or something. I mean, that's what the whole Sputnik landing on the moon thing was. Yeah, probably is, yeah. I think we've got more immediate focus. I don't know. I'm just not equipped to talk on this. Like, I just don't know. Yeah, probably. Wouldn't be surprised.
Because it definitely sparked up that, you know, there's the Area 51, which I still actually don't quite know what it is, but there is definitely, like, I would not be surprised if there is, you know, 3% of the US economy going into something like this.
3%? There's an enormous amount. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there are places in the
I'd
US
out,
and China.
Yeah.
And
I'd be outraged
Russia.
As a citizen if there was a large chunk of my economy going on to chatting with aliens. Chatting breeze with aliens.
Fucking MSN with space. Anyway, did you hear about the real life drama that surrounded this thing? Two deaths were involved in the making of this. Yeah.
In the making of the series.
Yeah, and well, one of them was really recent. One of them was just after... This is crazy, you're not right. I thought you'd come across this in research. So, mispronouncing both these names again, I apologise, but Zhu Yao and Lin Qi.
I think you've... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's the best I can do, right? Someone could correct me. So Lin Qi was one of the people crucial in making this this. He was a he runs a company called Yuzu, that I believe was responsible for the creation of this show in a lot of ways. Linky has been obsessed with Three Body Problem forever. He said some really weird things about it in interviews, including he said, on my deathbed, the one thing I don't want to think is, how did I mess up Three Body Problem? Like, he adores or adored this work, right? He then hired Zhu Yao as a lawyer for his company and for the project of creating Three Body Problem. Linky, I believe, owned about $150 million US dollars worth of copyright licenses around the Three Body Problem universe.
Okay. You know,
like, being, right? So he's pretty integral to the creation. In a way, he's the boss. I believe he hired both David and I folded my piece of paper up. David Benioff and DB Weiss to let onto it as the showrunners. And then Zhu Yao, his lawyer, was demoted in some regard by Linky. And I'm going to tell this story in the most dramatic way I can. Zhu Yao is a big fan of Breaking Bad and owned a poison lab.
Oh dear.
And poisoned Linky with a beverage and another three members of staff, killing Linky. The Chinese...
And the other three members of staff.
The other three survived, but right. they were harmed, obviously. But of course, Lin Qi eventually succumbed and was killed. The show's frontrunner, you know, not frontrunner. Sorry, like the guy bankrolling this whole project,
the show, yeah.
Was killed. Zhu Yao was found guilty of this by the Chinese government and sentenced to death. And his execution happened around the time that this first aired on Netflix.
Wow.
Yeah. So what on earth was going on there? I mean, that's as much unbelievable drama as the content of the show in a way.
Wow.
Benioff was interviewed by The Hollywood Reporter, and he said, when you work in this business, you're expecting all sorts of issues to arise, but somebody poisoning the boss is generally not one of them.
Oh my word.
Absolutely incredible.
That is an incredible story in itself.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I feel like there's going to be a...
Sad, obviously, like, incredibly sad.
Yeah, but. And it's very recent, obviously, but, like, you could do a blooming... You could do a biopic or, like, of that event, of the creation of this show. Wow. Later on, you know? I mean, they got enough out of The Room, didn't they, with Disaster Artist?
Yeah, that is very bleak, and it's good of you to credit the two people that lost their lives due to the creation of this show.
I mean, one of them murdered the other and then was found guilty and sentenced to death. I'm not sanctioning the death penalty at all, but describing them as two losing their lives when one murdered the other. truly bizarre. And almost as suspicious, really, in a way, as some of the stuff that happens in the show.
Mm.
I don't want to get too... you know, conspiracy theorists with this, and of course don't want to risk us getting cancelled either, but we are sort of accepting that the Chinese government aren't fond of this, and then the guy with all the money and all the power bankrolling this, that owns the copyright, is killed, and then they very quickly find his lawyer guilty of poisoning him. Does that not seem a bit sus? Do you not think the Chinese government just offed him? I'm thinking aloud. I don't think that's true at all. But, it's just so weird, isn't it? Like, anything can happen.
I mean, maybe it's just an open and shut case, and the lawyer had a poison lab for some reason.
I just think
I don't think it's that hard to poison someone, though, is it?
Really? Not definitely not, but I think the idea of him being a big Breaking Bad fan and that was the inspiration is just completely nuts. Like...
Yeah, whoever added that piece of drama is obviously knows what they're doing. Second season, are you interested and anticipating the second season?
Definitely.
You are?
Yeah, definitely. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was cool. I became attached to the characters more and more as the show went on.
I don't like the name Augie, though.
Yeah, no.
I think it's short for August, which...
Augustine.
That kind of is a little jarring, but...
Yeah. I mean, Mike Evans, though, Jonathan Pryce, I mean, he's been killed off real quick.
Oh yeah,
you know, back from Game of Thrones.
A lot from Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
the writers, the cast.
Yeah, it's like the next thing they've done, isn't it? Benedict Wong is incredible. He's sort of one character that you really like still attached to. Of course, Jess Hong is Jin Cheng as well. She's great. Will Downing. I mean, I'm going to tune into the series too to find out if he's still alive in space, because that was absolutely tragic.
Yeah,
his brain. You know,
yes, that was a good bit. And this is the thing. It's the one of the really good things about the show is when you know, even though it's a small detail, you know how bad it is. Mm. The fact that the producers of Three Body Problem, and obviously the original writer, have created this story arc, this narrative, that as soon as you know that that cable from the parachute went loose, you know
exactly what the consequences are, and
that in itself, there, what is unbelievable storytelling, the fact that it's fine detail that is so drastic.
Yeah,
and once that, when that's told on screen so clearly and so vividly, I have to take my hat off.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I tell you what,
the horror that came across Jin's face.
Yeah, this has made me want to read the books.
Mm.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if I had the time, because I've got such a massive reading list, but I might consider it. Yeah. Also, Liam Cunningham as Mr. Wade is just brilliant. Yeah, great character. Dead interesting. Probably not at all similar to the books, but again, very different from his role in Game of Thrones.
And just before we end, I thought the theme music was quite Westworldy.
Oh yeah.
I have this obsession with theme music.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was really, really similar to Westworld. Yeah. And then you place Westworld next to this show. I mean, the last time I saw Westworld on TV, it was on Sky Sci-Fi. I also think that's done on purpose. I also think musical scores are aligned with shows that have gone before to kind of give you that almost continuation feel. You know, I'm watching something similar, I can resonate with Westworld while I'm watching this, because I have very fond memories of Westworld, and then this theme music comes on, and maybe I resonate with this in a positive light.
There's definitely sort of like...
It's a reach, but I think there's something
there. No, it's not. There's obviously, you know, people like directors, producers, writers, they want a nod to previous art, they want a nod to other things to like draw on that feeling, to draw on that kind of semantic world, 100%.
Because it's like, oh yeah, that's a positive feeling, because I really enjoyed... To be fair, I only committed to the first season of Westworld, but I loved that.
Yeah.
And I watched the first season of Westworld probably two or three times, and then hearing this music in Three Body Problem, it definitely, it's a playback.
Yeah, it's probably intentional
feelings
to put you back in that place, that headspace for which I'm watching. Yeah, for sure.
Thought it was very clever.